This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And love letters, as you know, are for anyone at any time, for any reason you have something significant to say. Today's guest, with a great deal significant to say, and stop it because you're going to make me laugh and I'm not going to be able to do this, Ruby, is Ruby Peterson Unger, who was Ms. Nancy. Before that, Miss Nancy, and you can tell us how that changed with the meeting with Gloria Steinem. And I'm just going to go right to you. I do want to say that, oh, yes, Ruby was also a KCBS radio talk show hostess.
Hostess.
We don't
host,
say
baby.
Host, baby. Yes. I thought it was host, and then I thought I'd be careful.
No.
Okay, host.
You don't say lawyeress.
I don't, but some people say S when they shouldn't.
Nobody says lawyeress.
I know, but people do say, my mother used to say till the end of her life, she was a girl lawyer or she was a lady lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
And I never got that either.
Yeah.
Okay, talk show host of Night Moves and was on the radio every, we said 5 days a week from midnight to 4 a.m. I don't know how you did that.
No makeup, no underwear.
Oh, that's how you do it. You save a little time.
You know, yes. You wear it. You just don't have to worry about
it. Yes. Good. Okay. So I'm just going to go right to you. Let's just start. How did you go from Miss to Ms.?
Well, it is a Gloria Steinem story. And our mutual friend, Angela Coppola, who founded Professional Women's Network, was at a party for support of Nancy Walker, who was a supervisor running right back in the 80s, and Gloria Steinem was there, and Angela dragged me over. She says, you need to talk to Gloria about this Miss business. And so it involves drinking.
What does that mean?
We had a glass of wine. And what does that mean? You have to get out of this room.
Honey. Yeah, I know.
So we had a little repartee, and she explained to me, when you hear Mr., there is no designation to whether they're married or not.
Right.
So why ought there be that for women? And Ms., as you may know, is an old English designation back, back to the 1400s.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And if you didn't know the gender, it would always, the invitation would go out as Ms. So even boys and young men were Ms. And when they were searching for a name for the magazine, they chose that among other things. So so there you be. And actually, I did change. The children could care less. If you're tall and a woman and in a dress, you're Mrs. Mrs. Nancy.
Oh,
you know, it's very cute. And Channel 2 was KTVU. There's only one, two, Fox, Cox. They were wonderfully generous to allow me to change my name because it meant a budget issue because I had to get new autographed pictures with a new, you know, instead of Miss or Miss. But, you know, it means something to me. It doesn't mean anything to the rest of the world. But I want to comment on your introduction of your program and the idea of a love letter. I have to tell you that the majority of my love letters after I moved to California from back east were to my parents.
Oh, yes.
I
now let me ask, where did you grow up back east?
I grew up, I was born in 1945. Thank you very much. I grew up in Milwaukee, that's in Wisconsin. And it's only because I was a speech therapist that I can say Milwaukee, because otherwise it's Milwaukee. Milwaukee, anyway.
Yes.
And then I like to say I detoxed, you know, my language in Connecticut. So where I did my speech pathology in the public schools in Farmington, Connecticut. Well, when I moved out here, there are so many wackos in Northern California, probably all of California, that I realized this really solid base, this very disciplined, loving, adoring childhood I had was maybe rare or just maybe, I don't know, not of the norm. And those were my love letters I would write to my mom, you know, who you have this conflict when you're going through puberty with your mother. And I just completely appreciated everything she did for me and raising me.
So how old were you when you came here?
A grown-up. I was a grown-up. I was, my training marriage ended, and I was, well, that was 1977, 45, 32. And I worked for the March of Dimes on a temporary job that went for 2 years. I worked in the retail industry, clothing, selling stuff to manufacturers, designers, like laces, trims, linings. But I was also doing comedy. And so I, and that started with Robin Williams, actually. He pulled me on stage with him at the boarding house.
Just randomly?
Well, I was crawling up to him on the floor.
Yes.
Thank you very much. During my March of Dimes tenure, there was something called the Super Walk, Walk America Now, but it was putting thousands of children out on the highways and streets of the Bay Area to raise money for birth defect prevention.
I remember, yeah.
Okay.
I remember when it changed from polio to birth defect.
That's exactly. Oh, do you?
I
right.
Sure
so
do,
we're the same genre, yes. So
I've been that genre actually a little longer than you
have. You, darling?
Yes, I have.
Well,
go
you
ahead.
Know, we wear it well and we dye our hair. So,
oh, if I didn't dye my hair.
No, fully, you know.
Oh, they'd be mixing the embalming fluid.
Oh, no, no,
at the
no. I'd just give her something nice to wear and take her jewelry off. So I was crawling up to Robin Williams with a promotional T-shirt on my back to give him, hoping he'd wear it. That was Super Walk because he was our guest celebrity.
Oh, okay. So you had a connection already with him.
But I hadn't met him.
Yes.
And I must tell you, he was doing a faith healing thing, and I said, oh, heal my open wounds. And boom, he drags me up on stage. We get a lot of laughs together. And then I mentioned something about his profuse sweating.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it would fly. I mean, I was getting hit in the face. And I said, oh, sweat. And he said, okay. And he hit me in the head, you know, with his hand. I mean, to protect me.
Oh, he's pretty healing.
Hard, though.
Yes.
Get out. You know, so I must tell you, Janet, I walked down that center aisle and I was like, I don't know, the next coming. Everybody, the applause, the laughter, I was hooked. So I started doing open mic nights. Uh-huh. I did two of those, realized I ought to get paid for this. And so I auditioned. We used to have a performing arts column in the Chronicle, San Francisco Chronicle, back in the 70s and early 80s. And I auditioned for Male Cabaret on Broadway once, female comic. Wow, everything I love, men taking their clothes off, Broadway, there'll be money, and I make jokes. So I got the job, and I, for 10 fabulous months, 9 shows a week, including they were lunch shows, 3 shows a day, I was a hostess probably, the MC. I was an MC, and Herb Cain loved me, so he called me a femme.
And by the way, oh, good, femc, I like that. But MC, people do say master of ceremonies and mistress of ceremonies.
Sure, yes, they do.
It's
yes,
a whole murky world
that's
until recently.
That's a designation.
Recently.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, but Herb Cain was very taken with the show, and he called me a saucy femc, sort of. It was great, but the show was so much fun. And when it closed, I thought, well, I really miss working with kids. Teacher column, I'm looking at that for a gig, and there's Romper Room.
And you knew they were looking.
Well said. In the teacher column, Romp Room TV Prague.
Oh, I see. Just like that teacher.
Experience with minority disadvantaged, which I feel I've always been for some reason. And, of course, I've worked with handicapped children as a speech therapist. And my BA is from University of Wisconsin in Madison, radio, television, film. So I graduated in 68. Now my first job in that field is 81. Very interesting. 6 fabulous years of bend and stretch.
Yeah, how did your behavior have to change from the kind of
strip show?
Wicked, comedian that you
well,
are
you know,
to dealing with
all
preschool.
College graduates swear and drink beer, do they not? I mean, that's where you learn to swear and drink beer if you didn't know that beforehand. And, you know, now it's a higher level of drugs. But when you're with children, you don't.
Right. Oh, you're saying even in real life, when you're with children, you don't.
Oh, no.
Right. Okay.
Would you?
So,
you wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't. You're
no.
right.
Uh-huh. Exactly. They're little monitors. I mean, they're little computers.
Right.
So, no, I love children. I'm down with it. I much prefer children to grown-ups, and it's your childlike substance that allows me to communicate with you on a certain level. And, no, it was just
I always wondered that,
fantastic.
Because knowing you and then seeing how you are down there with these little kids. Okay, so that.
Oh, yeah, I never. They were always, you know,
just like
they
real
were
life.
Always treated like just short grown-ups.
Okay,
you know,
so that gets to an interesting quality of yours that I've always noticed, which is you are just straight arrow. You don't change anything for anybody.
No, I really
so
don't.
You're never having to act for anybody, including these children.
No, the voice doesn't go up, well, how are you?
Oh, isn't that disgusting?
No, the voice doesn't do that. So there are six kids now. I know them because I'm also the producer of the show. You know, I'm everything of the show, 3 days a week. It's sort of a part-time job in a full-time existence because you're always Ms. Nancy. So I had pictures of them, and I'd go in the studio. Bobby, good to meet you. Get out on the stair unit, so blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So they're all lined up. They're 5 and 6 years old. I say, okay, how many of you have been in the Army? No. Raise your hand. How many of you have been married? No. Nobody's married. No one's been in the military. What have you been doing for 5 and 6 years? Watching TV, learning how to read, you know. And it was just... The kids are like nuts. So I would entertain them every time we had a down moment, which were many, because it was live on tape, as is this. Uh-huh. And there was no editing unless something
crashed. Oh, that's how I feel.
It's the best.
Yes, not editing. It goes in line with being honest about, because sometimes awkwardnesses and silences, they're part of life.
Right.
Yes.
And, you know, I would always, energizing for me as well, and you have to keep kids engaged. And, you know, the kids were wonderful. The parents were pains in the ass because they're sitting over here in the corner and...
Oh, probably gnashing their teeth.
I don't know. Yeah, sometimes it was really strange, and they're so fearful for their children.
They're fearful that they're going to look bad if their children do
something. Oh, it's all about that,
yes,
isn't it?
Right.
It's all about that. And I would send a copious letter home on what to wear, the fabrics to wear, because it's hot under the lights.
Oh, yes, it is.
The lights were huge, which is, diameter 24 inch or something,
sure.
You know. And it rings our little, you know, set, and we're hot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on a body mic. There's no mic for the children. Well, there's one hanging, but, you know, they're short. It doesn't really pick up, which was a great advantage if they answered wrong. Like if I held up something and I said, what color is this?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a ball that was blue, and the child would raise her hand and say, my grandmother died.
Uh-huh, I see.
And I'd say, that's right.
Not just missing the color, missing
the
point.
No. Yes. Well, you know, kids say things.
Course,
they just say things, you know.
Yes.
And I would say, that's right, blue.
Uh-huh.
And she'd look confused, but I'm smiling and nodding and you know, she's fine.
Interesting that they,
well, it was great. Uh-huh. It was really terrific. And
something like that never occurred to me.
Which part?
The person.
Lying to children.
Well, changing it for what it needs to be for that show.
Also, yes, because kids
you
need
could take
success.
The other, well, that also, but you could take the other answer, but it would take more time to get back on track.
Right. And, you know, if I said, oh, honey, I'm so sorry, I'm on a close-up.
Yes.
You know, or it's a medium shot, and you may not be seeing the children, or you may, but it's not going to make sense to the audience, and I'm going to have to say, her grandmother died, you know? It was a quick death. She died laughing.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, exactly.
Oh, yes, and then there's the danger of minimizing this tragedy.
Oh, totally. You
yes.
can't laugh it off.
No.
And, it's wonderful. Our blooper reel is spectacular because it actually happened on camera.
Yes.
And when I left, the guys put this together, and it's generally animal excrement is, you know, getting on me or the children.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a kid, though. Who, during the Pledge of Allegiance, we did stop then. During the Pledge of Allegiance, her little panties, I guess she had to go to the bathroom, blasted off of her.
Oh, my goodness.
And I must say, her puddle was larger than the llama the week before. And this is when we discovered we didn't have a mop in the studio. And the mother stands up, oh, let me help. I said, well, what can you do? You know, do you have a mop?
Oh.
Sit down. She had a fur coat on. So, you know, we did stop then and get the child changed.
Was she upset? The child?
Probably. But you just move on.
Yeah.
You just move on. And I'm thinking here of saying the Pledge of Allegiance. I got letters on two subjects, the most letters from grown-ups on two subjects. Mm-hmm. One was saying the Pledge of Allegiance. People were outraged in Berkeley, and mostly Berkeley, that I would just say this militaristic, patronistic, rote memorization of a pledge to this entity, our government. And I talked it over with Romp Central back in Baltimore, and they said, okay, we'll do it every other day. And I always talked about what it meant. You know, I always said it's 13 strikes and 50 stars. And when we look at it and say the pledge, this is what we mean. And I would always turn around so that my back was facing the camera, and I'd say, raise your right hand, and you put in the middle of your chest, which is actually where the heart is. You know, the little technicalities based on my limited medical knowledge for speech pathology. So now I'm getting letters from parents saying, what's wrong with saying the pledge? Why are you doing it every other month?
Oh, my goodness.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And actually, the other thing was, I would start out by saying, if the grown-up at home would like you to do this with us, please join us. Because, you know, ultimately,
Personal choice,
or the grown-up. Right. I never said parents. I'd always say the grown-up at home, may there be one.
Yes.
And not that you're just plunked in front of the set. So that was one. The other issue.
Oh, also, all children aren't raised by parents.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yes, of course.
They might be with a caregiver, a nanny.
Right.
They might be in a preschool, grandparent, you know.
Exactly.
Moms and dads and sisters and brothers and lots and lots. You know, there's a family is people who we care about, is a song from Romper Room. So I, the other issue, when I first started, Romper Room, Incorporated, told me to always engage the children as much as possible in any song that a guest, get local guests as much as possible. I knew this woman, I just met her, who played the guitar and sang to children, and she came on, this is on our old Romper Room set, and we're sitting there in our little mushroom stools, and she's singing, I don't eat animals because I love them, you see. I don't eat animals, I don't want nothing dead in me. And then when she said dead in me, little Gus's face was like, ugh. You know, it was horrifying. I saw that. I saw that from the children. And so I kind of, you know, oh, I think we'll stop with that verse. And, you know, because the children were singing along. Well, the mail, like 30-some letters on that subject, which a station extrapolates that that's how many thousands of viewers, because nobody writes in unless they're really upset about something. I, for 3 years, I was getting mail from places that didn't even have KTVU, places in the Midwest.
That you were talking about not eating meat, or that you were talking about
you should about or you not shouldn't. Eating meat.
Oh, they didn't want you to talk about not eating meat.
Uh-huh. And the reason they knew of it is that they put it in the California Women in Agriculture newsletter. Agriculture. So it was amazing to me to have this response. So I called it back everybody who phoned in and left a message with a phone number. I am so very, very sorry, because the parents have the ultimate responsibility.
Right.
Who's to say, you know, that a dead thing you're putting in your body, plants get dead, you know, I mean, everything gets dead, or we wouldn't be eating it. I mean, people eat live insects, but that's another show. So it was great. It was really the happiest.
I was thinking of live goldfish, that thing that used to be kind of a collegiate concept.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
But there are people who eat, you know, bugs and things.
I see.
Chocolate covered.
Right. I know.
They should eat roaches in New York, is what they should eat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because a never ending
supply. They should eat pigeons here.
Well, don't they? Isn't that, what are they? Pheasant. What is that?
That's different.
Let's have somebody else figure this out.
Yes, let's do that.
So then KCBS Radio. I was hired away from Romper Room.
Oh.
And I didn't want to. And then finally I said, okay, how much? And it was double my salary. Because we don't value children, you know. Our society doesn't value children. When we worked overseas in the former Soviet Union, all of the puppet shows there were grown-ups for grown-ups, and the life existed for children. Parents, their children were everything to them. Very, you know, they would never give up their children to other than a family member if they were working. You know, we're quite different here culturally.
Well, and it's changed here also. There's been a huge shift to what's for children now. I mean, I think with the coming of Sesame Street.
Right, but there's still people who don't put their kids in front of a TV screen at all. And there are giants of different kinds of screens. Mm-hmm. I mean, now screens are your phone. They're your iPad, your, you know, it's called mobile marketing. Right. You know, screens are everywhere.
Oh, I know.
When I was on KCBS Radio, I realized what a bad fit this is. And I actually I didn't want to talk to most people. So
This was live call-in?
Oh, yes.
Oh, so you didn't say that. So that's why you were there for 4 hours.
Yes, of course. Midnight to 4 in the morning.
I didn't.
Yeah, it's a call-in talk show. And I had a phone
screener. On any subject?
Well, here's the deal. It's a news station. But I didn't want to do news. It was icky. It was the beginning of AIDS, and there were a lot of people who were really angry about AIDS, and I became an AIDS activist, and my first educational film was AIDS Education for 3 to 8 year old children, based on my knowledge of what was going on because of my proximity to the newsroom and, you know, being on a news station.
So how do you talk to children that young about AIDS?
Thank you for asking.
Uh-huh. How could I not?
There was a committee back in 86 who of doctors, specialists between the Centers for Disease Control, it was not prevention, that just Centers for Disease Control, and the Pediatric Association.
Mm-hmm.
They studied for 18 months, this committee of doctors, to come up with what your goals would be for children at this age to discuss AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we had billboards, don't catch AIDS.
Right.
Stay away from AIDS, or, you know, AIDS won't. And children were just like asking their parents, what's AIDS?
Right.
Am I going to catch AIDS?
Oh.
I have a teacher aide in the classroom, you know.
So you can talk about it without
getting... lemonade, you know. I mean, it's a confused, these words mean different things. So what is a germ? How big is a germ? Where is a germ located? AIDS is a very, the HIV germ, which causes AIDS, is a very different germ than a cold or a flu or any other kind of germ. And
so you want to bring awareness without bringing panic.
Well, these are the goals.
Yeah.
No, I'm, you know, what is a germ?
Uh-huh.
How big is a germ?
I see.
Where is a germ located?
Mm-hmm.
The HIV is very different than any other kind of germ. People all over the world can get the germ, and there are people working, doctors and nurses and scientists are working all over the world to get a cure or, you know, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. So having been in entertainment and in education, the minute I saw those guidelines, I knew exactly what to do. Oh, this will be a rap tune. This will be a little dance that we can do. This will be some demonstrations. And I had, you know, It was my overt, you know, it was my really
work of a lifetime.
I thought I was going to die making it because I'd never produced anything that big.
Mm-hmm.
I'd done some public service announcements on child abuse prevention at Channel 2, and they won national awards, and I was very happy about that. And my letter there, that's actually, I always messed up. The reason I'm on this planet, Janet, is this little girl who was 5 years old, and she saw the PSA about playing this secret touching game.
Mm-hmm.
And she told her mother that daddy had been playing that game with her.
Oh.
And the mother got an attorney, issued an enjoining injunction or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the attorney wrote me this letter. It's that kind of like, to whom it may concern, my client's daughter saw something having to do with
mm-hmm.
Romper Room
mm-hmm.
and this subject.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, you know, I can
honestly
say...
Because of that, she had the
because
courage
Because of that,
to,
she knew...
She had the courage and the
this
knowledge.
This was wrong.
Yes, oh my
because
God.
Because the tag of that 30-second, well, actually, there were 1 minute spots, was if someone asks you to play the secret touching game and not tell your parents, it's wrong. It's never right to not tell your parents. And truly, truly, my mom framed that letter. I would send my mom back in Milwaukee all my mail,
because
she's mommy. You know, she's my mommy.
Oh, so I forgot what a rich vein of love letters here. As a public person, you would be getting those, too.
Oh, my goodness. You have no idea. And the best letter were from prisoners. You know, we had a lot of incarcerated prisoners.
You know what? Maybe we'll do another one where you can just talk about these letters.
Sure.
Can we do that? Because
Absolutely.
We're running out of time for this.
Sure.
I would love to do that.
Oh, that'd be fun.
But I also want to say, you said you would write a love letter to your mother.
Oh, absolutely.
And that you have. And it occurred to me that you and your mother are both so lucky that you realized all that she gave you so young.
Yes.
Because sometimes it's people in their 60s and 70s and 80s when it's never too late to write that letter, as long as you're still drawing breath. But you don't get it to land exactly where you want it to land.
Oh, absolutely. Uh-huh. And then we had mom and my father. I'm daddy's girl. My folks were divorced when I was 9. Mm-hmm. And I heard a phrase from an author's daughter who's written, it's like Cheever. I think John Cheever's daughter has written a memoir. And she said, I was a double only child, which meant that her parents were divorced and she had an excess of love from each. And, you know, that's hearing that, I thought, well, that's exactly what I was, because I was daddy's girl. I was everything to him. He was not in our household, which really saved me, because daddy was a rogue, and he had taverns, and he was a truck driver, and his lifestyle didn't work with the child's, and didn't work with my mom's.
But how nice to know that that a parent can be not talented as a spouse.
Oh, exactly.
But very good as a parent.
Right.
Oh, that's a blessing.
Oh, we had 5 wives.
Uh-huh.
And numbers 4 and 5 were goddesses. I adored them. My mother loved them. I mean, everybody was very close. His 5th wife was his widow. When she died, I actually had...
Is all this written down?
Oh, darling. I can't be bothered.
Okay.
People ask me that. I am serious. James Ferrantino was on a talk show with me when people are talking in the afternoon. This is so old history.
Oh, well, I understand that.
So last century. But he'd say, do you write
this? But it'll be new to somebody in 100 years.
Yeah,
okay.
I suppose I could, but it's just embarrassing to me, actually.
Oh,
it just sounds like I'm blowing my own horn. For what purpose? You know, what am I? What purpose would that be? It's interesting, surely, but, you know, you're going to follow this career path? It's my career path, but, you know, you're going to follow
that's a fair way to look at something.
Yeah, I don't get it, you know. I don't have, you know, although I could have a great title, Through the Magic Mirror, or, Through the Green Door, something like that. I don't know. The Truth Behind the Magic Mirror.
I'm thinking, of course, of a series of letters to yourself.
Oh, I have those.
Oh, you do? Okay.
When I was going through my separation and divorce from my training husband, I had these notebooks, Janet, and you could tell, you know, when you're really angry, there's 5 words per page.
Handwriting
and
pages. Yeah.
You know, it's
the pressure on the page.
It's so magnificent, because that was the 70s, the parachute years, you know, what color is my rainbow and all that stuff. And I would write, this is what I want, ba-bum, 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 ba-bum. And I look at it, and I find it now, because we have way too many things for a little Victorian.
Oh.
And I am, there's some things... You know,
burn the sofa, keep those.
No, well, I need the sofa.
Not my business.
I take a lot of naps, yeah. But I have a mate. I have a husband has a plethora of things.
Okay.
And parents who had some real jewels of antiques and treasures.
Yes.
And as they downsize and pass away, and as my family passes away, I'm getting these fabulous things. And it's like,
oh, yes, I know that.
I am juggling, man. You know, 1,300
juggling
square
stuff.
Feet.
Yeah.
You know, give me a break.
But how nice to see. Isn't there something valuable about your own? I'm always talking, encouraging people to write things in handwriting. Because handwriting's king.
I have a file of letters.
Wonderful.
From relatives. Notes and letters, because they're going to be gone.
And don't you still know everybody by their handwriting?
Yes.
Like when you get an envelope, you can see just the handwriting.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, of course you do. And my mother's, when I see a note with my mom's handwriting, I could never get rid of that piece of paper.
Right.
You know, so I have my Aunt Bernice, who lived to be 91, and because she was single and didn't have children. And she her handwriting changed so much over the years.
Oh, frailer?
Yeah, of course. And now my mom-in-law, who is, I adore, were the same people. My poor husband has married the same woman. Both Croatian, both Scorpios, both only children, both year of the rooster. I mean, come on. What are the chances of that? And we both love Alan. He's a good man.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Oh, this is just everything you're saying is delicious. I wish we had hours.
Yeah,
there's a lot more to say. But
I'm in a parking lot, you know.
Okay. I'm gonna say thank you for doing this with me.
Oh, what a joy. Yeah. You're so good to do this.
Thank you.
I love this concept.
I do too. I do too, and I love what you bring to it. So I wanna just say, if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, you can see every time that every occasion is worth writing a love letter, and writing that love letter itself is a special occasion. And if you have things in your own handwriting that you can look at years later, you can see exactly if you were angry or happy. Whatever it is, it's all there in the handwriting. So until next time, this is Janet Allen and
Ruby Unger
saying goodbye.